Good morning, and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists. We are one of many such as... I already did that. Okay, it's turned on, I promise. we are one of many such lodges situated around the world, and each shares a particular basis of activities and teaching, but each is independent of the other, so that ULT is an interesting situation in that we are historically an association of independent students, people who are interested in pursuing individual lines of work and who volunteer on the basis of conscience to come together as a whole and promote the philosophy of theosophy. So as such, if you double check with our periodical on the back, the declared purposes, you will notice that we are not an organization. There is no constitution, no bylaws, no officers. There's no tithing, there are no dues, there's no admissions fees, but rather it's the philosophy which is the binding agent, as it were, of the efforts of those who, by free will and choice, affiliate themselves with the theosophical movement. So the philosophy is succinctly based on the notion of universal brotherhood, and the folks that are attracted to these declared purposes are those who wish to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. So the fundamentals of the philosophy, the basis of practical altruism, the philosophy of universal brotherhood becomes the shared purpose, if you will. And having said that, there's really no side issues of any kind. You won't find any political bent. You won't find commentary on current events of any sorts, but rather all the time from this platform is given and focused on the philosophy itself. So everyone is welcome, certainly, to the talks, and everyone is welcome to the cause who shares that desire to serve the public, to serve humanity at large, to serve great nature at large. And you can talk to anyone who's at the book table about affiliating with the cause or about how you might serve, how you might participate. And certainly donations of time, service, study, cash, everything is welcome in order to keep the building available for weekly and monthly activities. If you check the brochure for this particular quarter, you'll see that we're in the third month of the quarter, and March has been a very busy period. Every Wednesday, the building opens up 5:30 promptly, and for 2 hours, there's an open reference library available. You can come in, you can research your own line of interest, or you can prepare for a particular study class or to look up something that you've heard in a talk that's kind of piqued your curiosity. This month, March, we're in the process of looking at the development of mind. And today, March 13th, our title is The Purpose and Benefit of Meditation. Next Sunday is March 20th, and that will be William Q. Judge Day. That is an annual tradition in which the life and the accomplishments of Judge are celebrated, if you will. And the title for this year's William Q. Judge Day is Philosopher, Guide, and Friend. Wednesday nights, in addition to the library hours from 5:30 to 7:30, at 7:45, there's a more informal presentation. It's a study class, and it's an effort by a number of folks to come together and look at a text that hails from the late 1800s, The Ocean of Theosophy. This coming Wednesday night is March 16th, and at 7:45 promptly, there will be a class on the second half of the chapter on Kamaloka, and it is entitled, Can the Dead Communicate? Again, if you're interested, there's always an extra reference assigned, and those are available at library hours. Friday night, the third Friday of each month, there is a rolling project. A number of students get together and they compare religions and philosophies from around the world. The doors open at 6:30 on that third Friday of the month, this month, March 18th. The session itself will last from 7 to 8. And that is a presentation this coming Friday night on Patanjali's Yoga Aphorisms. Certainly a great follow-up for this morning's consideration. In April, there is a unique forum being offered. Periodically across the year, there are efforts to get together with students in other lodges, New York and Washington, or an effort to pull together a short presentation that's honed for the general public. And Saturday, April 16th, this building will be used. The session will go from 1 to 3:30, and the title will be Karma, right?
What You Don't Know.
Karma, What You Don't Know. Okay, thank you. So again, all of these things are free and open. If you double-check the declaration, you can see how to contact either our website, and from there you can get to others. The readings used, the sources used, are frequently available at different websites supported by students of theosophy around the world. One among them would be Phoenix ULT. And if perchance you still are a person who studies best from a book, or if you like to write in margins and underline whatnot, you can double check the book table before and after any one of the meetings. There's always someone available to help, and everything is offered at cost. There's no profit made, just whatever the printing cost and the transportation of getting it delivered, that's what the charge is. And so you can buy things for home use if you'd like. So we'll take a break while my partner arrives, and then we'll start with the panel. Our topic this morning, as you heard, was meditation, purpose, and benefits. And certainly the word meditation has been widely used and widely expressed since the late 1800s in this Western Hemisphere. And since the beginning of the introduction of the Eastern topics in the late 1800s, like with any pebble thrown in the pond, there are many ripples that go out. And some of those ripples hit boulders and hit coastlines or you know, the fish jump or whatever. And some of the ripples take on changes. So there's now a spectrum of ideas about what's the purpose of meditation, what is meditation, and what are the benefits, the outcomes of meditation. We're reminded that at the beginning, when this topic was initially introduced, there was a warning that certain forms of yoga, hatha yoga among them, certain forms of meditation are dangerous for those souls who were using European, North American incarnations. The instrumentation needed to use those particular forms may not be in existence. So there was a warning about that. There was also clear statements when these ideas were brought into the Western Hemisphere that the soul begins in perfection. And therefore, if the starting place of the soul is perfection, the starting place of all efforts should be soul-centered, not in physicality, not in psychic or personality issues. So having said that, the first half of the panel this morning, you'll hear a little overview about some of the purposes and some of the outcomes of meditation from a general public point of view, and the second portion will have to do with the theosophical straight line teachings on both purpose and benefits. There are many among us who either have not heard the word meditation or poo-poo it or say, okay, you know, that's good for the people in the East, but that doesn't fit my particular lifestyle. And for folks, thinkers working along that particular path, there is a lack of awareness that there's different kinds of meditation, and there's a lack of awareness that there's a lifetime's meditation. There's meditation when we sit for a particular purpose at particular times in particular places. There's also a different view on what happens in the deep sleep states. But for in general, that particular group may not have a stated public purpose, but they're still going through a lifetime's meditation. Such thinkers may be focused on the personal and the physical, just keeping mind and body together. They may have a more materialistic bent. They may be using qualities of life that have more to do with desire or maybe more to do with an inertia of mind where they're physically centered. Now, obviously, the consequences would outweigh the benefits, perhaps. It's still an opportunity to learn and to follow a lifetime's path of meditation, but there may not be any spiritual progress. There may not be anything more developed along the lines of concentration of mind, soul, and heart. These may be souls who continue to live in a stream of consciousness fashion, kind of scatterbrained, if you will. They may strengthen their use of memory and recollection. They may strengthen certain fantasies. They may strengthen their desires in a certain way. But overall, they're tied to reincarnation and a karma that is based on the externals of life, the illusions of life. We have also among us others who have heard about meditation and who are using it for particular purposes. It may be those who want to succeed in business, and they're using goals and purposes that have a corporate focus that are based more on profit and materialism, on logic and reason. And they may indeed have mixed motives. Their motives for their particular form of meditation, strong focus on the daily lifetime motivation for the purposes that they define. Perhaps they're using meditation to hone their material or lower physical use of mind, as we can figure it. These are folks that strengthen their particular motives and strengthen their particular desires, but they too are creating karma that's more transitory, that's more based on the externalities of life, that may be based on mixed or even selfish motives. What's in it for me? What immediate gratification can I get? Perhaps what I can accomplish for my family. There's another group of thinkers who may be using meditation for stress or health-related issues. They may be using it for new age considerations. They may be using it for religious purposes. These might be souls that have also mixed motives, ranging from the very altruistic and sincere to a self-centered, I've got to take care of this physical body, and this health for this physical body is most important. They may be using a variety of techniques, among them hatha yoga, breath control, walking meditations, if you will. They may be chanting. They might be using mantras. Some of them may be sitting to gain a particular voidness of passivity of mind, if you will. And again, depending on their particular motive and their particular focus, they can be strengthening what the Easterners would call the tamasic qualities of life. They might be strengthening the active rajasic qualities of life. Some may be reaching to a glimpse of of the holiest spiritual essence they can. But the outcome ranges with the individual, and once again, they are sustaining personal karma. They are strengthening individual manifestations of mind, the notion that we identify with a body or a particular mind or individual, and they may be strengthening the lower use of mind, but may in no shape or form be strengthening a more spiritual bent, that which we might say would be buddhi manas, spirit and mind and heart as a composite. And certainly we see certain dangers, if you will, in that kind of practice. There's a danger of passivity. There's a danger of psychism, if you will, with some of those practices. And so we see some warnings about some of the outcomes for that kind of meditation practice that would yield some really complex developments. You know, we can set fire to a forest with a single match. And so how we hold the purpose of meditation, how we view our motives in the purpose of our meditation, that can lead us down quite a dangerous path of activity.
So we'll open up this section regarding the theosophical idea of the purpose and the benefits of meditation with a quote from Mr. Judge. And this is a combination, kind of melding the purpose and the benefits. He says, "When the self, as we understand it, is annihilated, when the soul has been able to endure the transcendent vision, of itself as deity, when difference no longer exists and the one is merged in the all, the storehouse of spiritual energy is thereby replenished, and all humanity receives an impulse that raises them a step near the divine union also. Nay, further, the divine impulse, after passing through man, descends to vivify the lower creation. The whole universe is thrilled by it." So we can see that meditation is more than just sitting and, trying to blank your mind out. The theosophical idea is extremely metaphysical. It's an extremely spiritual, inward growth that occurs. And we'll be looking at the idea of theosophical meditation and purpose and kind of why sometimes we're stuck in doing that, and why we need to do this on a regular daily basis. And what meditation is actually the cessation of active external thoughts. Focus one's mind for a time for spiritual purposes. And there are actually two sorts. And one is when we set aside the same time every day to sit and concentrate and meditate, and the whole idea is to make our minds porous to the promptings of our higher nature. And it's important to do it on a consistent basis at the same time, because theosophy speaks of cycles and how it's important to maintain those cycles on a regular basis. So once we start to meditate at the same time, or even at the same time in the evening, we are using the energy behind that cyclical law to help us continue on with doing it on a regular basis. Because if we do it on a regular basis, it becomes not easier, but more potent, so to speak, because as it says, the whole idea is to rid our minds of the everyday thoughts. And if we do it on a regular basis and use that idea of the cyclic law, we will be more apt to try and get, you know, stay inward and get the everyday mundane things out of our minds. And meditation functions on that plane of spirit. And if we can maintain it on that plane of spirit, then the ideas of the personal life, we can look at our lives and evaluate them in the light of our higher nature. And some of the benefits then would be, one thing we did want to put out there too is that the focus is the divine cannot come down to us. We have to focus on the divine. So the idea of meditation is to be open so that we can move ourselves towards the divine. And the highest path then, the spiritual path, being that of constant devotion and entire resignation to the law. Again, we're using that law of cycles because it strengthens and arouses the faculties of the inner man. So by doing this, as we said, on a regular basis and trying to keep our minds clear of all the, you know, I always look at it as being a little hamster in the wheel going around and around and around. Well, we got to put something in there to stop that wheel. And so trying to focus on the inner is what we're looking at. And there was another quote. It says, how petty seems the cares of the earth when we indulge in deep reflection. So this is the overall purpose, like what we read in the beginning, that the quote by Mr. Judge. But the quote by Mr. Judge is very much an advanced kind of an idea. Because even if we can just sit and meditate for 10 or 15 minutes, and we feel as though we're very much involved with our higher nature, that's wonderful. That certainly is a way to go. But Mr. Judge is looking at, you know, forward down the road, that when we do consistently meditate, the whole idea is for us to, it is for universal brotherhood, is for us to raise awe of life to a higher level as well. So if we can just start with 10 minutes a day, if or even 5, it changes us, and if we can be changed, then in our little corner of the world, we can affect others as well. So the whole idea is we're trying to, as he says, annihilate that personal self. We need to raise up our lower nature. And some of the reasons why we can't meditate, we did mention that, but they can be mental seeds from our past lives. It could be a karmic issue that we're having, and it may just make it harder, but by our persevering with it, we are working with the law again. And if our personal mind especially is attached to the more material things, if we're worried about what's happening that day, what's going to go on with work, I have to, you know, do an interaction with this person who I don't like or whatever, you know, that can interfere. And we expect immediate results. We expect that after one or two attempts at meditating, we can't get it. Oh, well, I can't do it. But HPB always says that trying, try, no matter what is going on, just to keep trying. And that is an indication that we are being persistent, that we will keep trying to do it. And if we're concentrating on our personal self, oftentimes that can be an impediment. We did want to just touch on concentration, because concentration is kind of an interesting idea. And concentration in the dictionary says focus all of one's attention or mental effort on an object or activity. And it's interesting because, as was mentioned about the life's meditation, we think it was Mr. Judge, actually, concentration, from what we found in our studies for meditation, we found two different ideas in regards to concentration. Mr. Judge also referred to the life's meditation as concentration. But then concentration is that ability to focus on one idea to the deterrent of everything else around us. So it's almost as if we have to develop that idea of concentration in order to meditate. So if our concentration is better, then our meditation will be better too. Will and desire lie at the doors of meditation and concentration. If we desire truth with the same intensity that we had formerly for material goods, we will speedily possess concentration and acquire meditation. So Theosophy talks about behind will stands desire. So that idea pulls into this whole idea of meditation as well. Because if we desire to do that, then our will kind of, you know, push us along into action. So it depends upon how our desire, how strong our desire is in order to continue on this daily effort to meditation. And HPB really did not advocate any system of posture, breathing, or exercise. She did, although in the philosophy, we will see that we are not encouraging to blank one's mind out. The theosophical idea of meditation is a very active one, that we focus on a higher idea, because the whole idea with being passive is it is actually a danger to a to one person. So the whole idea with theosophy then is that it's a very active mental state. And another thing that she advocates that can help, and this would also be part of the lifetime's meditation too, is a cheerful attention to one's duties no matter what they are. And a lot of times that can be difficult depending upon what it is that's going on, but we're, the whole idea of looking for the sacred in the mundane. And the right perception, which deliberately takes the mind off of the mundane. And at that point, the mind and body will follow if our mind is in a good spot. And the subject and type of meditation will vary according to the person. And the whole idea is the raising of the soul to the divine, devotion, and which leads to devotion. And we would like to end with a very interesting quote. There's a little short article we found called Silence and Speech in one of the books. And it says, "Speak not, I passionately entreat thee, till thy thought has silently matured itself. till thou have another than mad and mad-making noises to emit, hold thy tongue, till some meaning lie behind, to set it wagging. Consider the significance of silence. It is boundless, never by meditating to be exhausted, unspeakably profitable to thee. Cease that chaotic hubbub wherein thy own mind runs to waste, to confuse suicidal dislocation and stupor. Out of silence comes thy strength. Speech is silvern, silence is golden. Speech is human, silence is divine.
Yes, thank you both for the presentations. Shouldn't the overall purpose of meditation be to try to unite ourselves with the divine and to realize that all is one, that we are all interconnected, that we are a part of the divine, that the divine is in us and without us and everywhere, and that by so doing, we can help to dissipate that sin of separateness which is in the world, which we're told is really the greatest sin of all, mm-hmm. the sin of separateness. Would that be one of the highest aspects of meditation?
Yes, that is certainly the reason why we meditate, is to eventually realize that we are not only one with the divine, but that all is one with the divine. Because once we, and we wonder, you know, when we just start out with meditating, this is one thing we didn't find when we were looking, and if somebody wants to answer this, that's fine. That we want to know, is it something that we can achieve in just one lifetime? If we're having issues in the beginning, can we achieve it? Can we get it, so to speak? Because that is the goal, is to unite not only ourselves with the divine, but to pull all of nature up behind us. Is this a follow-up?
Yeah, it is. If we're looking at meditation as a goal, as a tangible thing, maybe we're being a little too worldly, that we want results and we want them now. And from what we understand, well, we all meditate to some degree or another. It's just a matter of perfecting it. But it may take many lifetimes mm-hmm. to perfect.
It would seem also that if we think about a purpose of life, the goal of merging soul into the divine can remain a selfish one. For some who are looking for individuation and they're still self-centered, the purpose of a life's meditation, a loftier purpose, may be to gain discernment, to begin to understand when we're being selective and when we're being universal, and what kind of veils to our minds exist that we need to get to a stance where altruism becomes an intuitive, reactive force in our lives, that we can live to benefit all and live with wisdom to benefit all, to do it in a proper way to empower all others, whether animal, vegetable, mineral, or human, but to empower all others to sustain spiritual life, or whether we're enabling. All these things are needed to be looked at and resolved.
And we think too, just a quick note, that when we were talking about the blocks to meditation, we wonder if not being able to meditate or doing it for only a minute or two, if we're focusing more on, am I going to do it today? Oh, darn, I didn't do it. If we're focused on that, we wonder if that would be a block to meditation as well. Yes.
The But the only thing that exists is right now, in this very moment. And that realization alone is what makes us creators. So if we can just be in the moment, and what contemplation and meditation must do is make us present in the moment. And that's how we lose sight of time and space when we meditate, because we merge ourselves and our mind with something greater than what we are. And I think this is why this meditation is called Raj Yoga. It's the highest yogic act that we can perform by being present. And of course, contemplating that which is greater than we are. But the Gita talks about that, you know, karma yoga. So are these, is this what we are here to do?
That's an excellent description of what the whole idea of Raj Yoga is that it is a higher form, we think, of yoga, because that is our the whole purpose of it is to connect with the divine. And as we're doing it, and the suggestion being present in that moment when we're doing it, that in itself maybe can prevent or help us to prevent that whole idea of what's going to be happening later in the day or what happened yesterday. But by being present in the moment and concentrating on being that way, and if something pops in, just acknowledge it, say goodbye, and go on your way.
In some ways, Raj Yoga is a very inclusive, synthetic model, if you will. Because if you think about it, in the Raj Yoga practice of sitting for meditation in the morning, closing the day with a meditation period, attempting as best we can at this plane under karmic constraints to stay in the moment throughout the day, we begin to develop a discernment of what is the real, what is eternal, what is spiritual versus what is transitory or personal. We begin to practice as though we are in one moment, not in time, not in space, not in geography, but a virtuous fulfillment of duty in the moment. And that right action, right thinking, right words, all of that begins to snowball with the practice, with the attempt, with the pure desire to try to accomplish that. And then gradually the benefits unfold naturally, that we begin with this practice, with this synthesis, to begin to hone all instrumentation from the physical to the astral to the soul, the spirit, to begin to hone a synthesis of focus of energy, of focus of will, if you will, and intuition. All of these soulful, spiritual powers we can imagine begin to unfold. Our problem is not, is it going to happen in this one life? Do I need 7 more lives? I've done 6 months. That's not what it's about. It's this gradual, eternal moment that begins to dawn on the individuated. Way in the back.
We think it's important to remember that we are spiritual beings, and when we as thinkers first inhabited these human forms, we knew we were all one. We knew we were spiritual beings. But at some point, you have to let the child grow on its own. And so those early instructors left us to make our own choices, our own mistakes. And we have created brick walls for ourselves that we can't get through. Maybe in this life, you cannot really meditate, but you can spend a few minutes each day looking to be calm, to be in control, to be peaceful. If you only can do that, you begin a focus that in your next life will open up more for you. So we should put less stress on ourselves as I am meditating, I am successful, and more on I am at peace with life and trying to do my duties.
Well, that's the whole idea that HPB talked about with trying, to keep attempting to do it. And we have to put our motive, we have to think about what our motive is as well, because we think if it's, as was just suggested in the comment, if we think of it, oh no, I can't meditate, it's just not going to come, well, that's kind of, that's going to deter us. But if we keep in our mind that as long as we're trying and we're doing it with the highest motive in mind, then as was suggested, then things, you know, we can change our personality, our lower self. We can, and that's one of the whole focuses of meditation when we're looking at the bigger picture of evolution too. It's all, that's what's wonderful about theosophy, because everything that we think about, that we do, that has the higher in mind will also affect the evolution, not only of ourselves, but of all the lower kingdoms too. Right. So things are not just isolated. There is a pattern to all of what the philosophy talks about. With the meditation concentration, when we're looking at the three fundamentals, when we're talking about all the lower kingdoms and how it's our responsibility, everything is tied together. And by learning how to meditate, that will assist us in our path to accessing the divine that's in us.
The great irony is that we really do meditate. Even for those who deny this concept as having any import or practice, they do know how to meditate. When we set our sights on something and we have an urge or a desire or a yen for some object, most human beings from cradle to grave are capable of expressing a particular desire and then finagling somehow to procure that. And we see tremendous amounts of concentration and willfulness and one-pointedness in the athlete, in the musician, in the dancer, in the artist, in the infant trying to learn how to walk. So it's a very natural kind of development of mind over matter that we can block if we're fearful, if we're doubting, if we're anxious about something, then the growth will not come. And we chuckle often over a little colloquial phrase, you know, grow where you're planted. Well, all we have to do at this time of year is sit in a park or a garden or observe a plant sprouting out of a rain spout on one of these higher buildings. They grow where they're planted. There are natural impulses in the incarnation we're using, that we're experiencing. And if we become aware or mindful of the triggers that work for that particular assemblage of instruments or principles, or however you want to envision that for yourself, if we're aware of what moves us in everyday life, we can gradually begin to transition and bloom right where we're planted. Use those same techniques of calming, of remaining one focused. It might be a sight, it might be sound, it might be a scripture of some kind. It may be a scent, it may be music, it might be a picture. It may be that we can imagine the ideal human, a master. And that kind of beginning to calm and focus on those points will lead us naturally into the strengths that we've developed in past incarnations and the tendencies that we're currently experiencing.
One thing we did want to add, we were thought, is the idea when we're talking about this time of the year being youthful and strong, that we can use this time of the year, the energy, we talked about this at the end, at some of our meetings at the end of the year, that we can use the young, youthful energy of the earth now to help us in any endeavor that we do. In the back.
If we were wondering, there is an Eastern process that one can do. It's called shavings. Mm-hmm. Can you give an explanation of what is shavings?
If we're trying to get to what is real and true, if this is a dilemma for us, you know, for those who don't meditate at all yet, there's a kind of a ball and a pinball machine effect of thinking, where we boing from one thing to the other based on stimuli from outside of self. So in the shaving process, if we were to sit quietly in the morning hours, soon after awakening, maybe before we take breakfast, and we begin to consider, I am that. I am not someone's child or parent or aunt or uncle or cousin or sibling. And we begin to say, I play this role. I can see that I play. I am an employee, but I'm not that. I act as that. So we go through this process very gradually of honing back, peeling the onion, or shaving the roles that we play, the masks we put on during a day, gradually come back from that. So what am I? I am that. I am a ray of the absolute. And that is a mental process. It is an active process that we can gradually train our senses and our physicality, our psychic abilities, our minds, to identify what is true and eternal, as opposed to the illusions, the maya of life around us. There was a hand here.
yes. I guess this is more like a testimonial. As far as meditation, what I have realized, and you know, for those who haven't done it and stopped, is that there is great benefit in meditating. And if you really want to know, you go start to do it, you do it for a while, and then you'll stop, and you'll see that it is extremely, you'll see the difference in it. And one of the things that, it was amazing, I saw this once, man, they interviewed Tiger Woods about, you know, his dilemma and being involved and what he was involved in, and they asked him the question, you know, what happened? And what he said was he stopped meditating. And that was just interesting to me. Of course, I only saw it once. I didn't see it again. I saw it in one interview. But meditation, I deal with meditation and also food intake.
The science of living, the art of life, is something, because we are spirit in action, because we can practice metacognition, we can do exactly what the speaker is describing. We can test something out and look at the before and after, look at the effects. We can recall the day when we set a tone in the morning, literally at one, a tone. We're at one with the universe, and this is what can be if I will it, if I desire it, and then make an effort during the course of that day to bring life, mind, back to that focus. We get rattled at work, take a minute, regroup, recenter, and then close that day with another session of reflection, self-examination. I set the tone in the morning, and then think about the events of the day. I was able to sustain the effort here, I lost it there. What was the trigger for losing it? How was I able to regain it? And very gradually, there's an experience of a oneness in the moment, that there's continuity across all moods, all emotions, all roles that we play, and it's a nice setting then to lay the physical down for the night's activity of the soul in deep sleep. And in contrast, those days when the alarm clock goes off or there's an emergency in the house and we're shot off the pillow and into daily activity at a frenetic pace, how different everything about the experience of that day is.
Yes, on the meditation theme, my purpose is I want to connect with the divine. And I want the divine running my life. I wanted to, you know, intuitively I want to know that it'll bring me things that I need to be doing. It'll bring me some peace if I can just release. I want it to run my existence, to bring things into my life that I want to bring. You know, sometimes I'll go off to the left. And when I do go off to the left, I'll know it. But I won't be at peace. I won't be at harmony with myself. So my meditation, I really want the divine to run my life right now. In this existence, bring me things that I need to bring. Bring me some self-control and put me in places where I need to be.
And where we need to be is in those places of service. So if we are able to practice across lives and lifetimes with this ongoing effort to the wisdom, I am a ray of deific essence, I am a ray of the divine, that's truly what the nature of the human is, and that is a oneness among all humans, regardless of what our outer form appears to be, then if deity moves all those lower instrumentations, we will remain in harmony, both within our own instrumentation and our ability to harmonize and to serve and to impress all of the lives that come into our sphere of influence.
And we would emphasize the idea too, when it was said to have deity run my life, we need to remember that we are that deific essence. And it's just, you know, we are attempting to do that meditation so that our mind, especially the lower mind, will consistently, as much as possible, focus on that higher deific essence so that the two of them are merged and we are acting as one, that it's not that deific idea is running our lives. So we just want to make sure that, you know, it's all one. In the back?
Interesting end to your sentence. Perhaps we just change that thought a little bit with, I would like to run my life more at one with the divine within. The moment we say, I want the divine to run my life, as was said, we've created a separateness as if it were something external. And it's the opposite of the direction we really do want to go with that statement made. So just changing the idea a little bit and meditating on that new idea brings us more in sympathy and
it may be that a perfect trigger when we're first sitting to gain the calmness is to think of the word namaste and what that means. You know, maybe we do some research and look up the word and see how it's used and then use that study that we've done in a period of meditation to consider it. And then perhaps that would help us hold that spiritual oneness, that truth. Yeah.
The awkwardness for most of us is that at the same time we're seeking spiritual oneness, I am one and alone with me. And that's why we have to keep going back to the fact that I am spirit and everyone and everything else is spirit. So it's an appearance, this aloneness. But I can learn that everything I want, I will. And sooner or later, it comes to me. That's the magic of karma. You cannot stop what you have created. If we really want the divine to run our lives, we have to realize, I am that divine, and I have to look for its reflection in the teachings of Buddha, of Christ, of Krishna. How should I act? How should I think? Begin to live by the golden rule and relax.
There's an article that can be found called Theosophy and the Practice of Meditation. And one of the quotes that they've pulled out, which I think is actually out of a Theosophy magazine, some words on meditation, is that the Sermon on the Mount, the Bhagavad Gita, the Dhammapada, the Voice of the Silence, the Light on the Path, the three objects of the Theosophical Society, which are also used in ULT, all these things are nice beginning points to help us out with what the speaker just said.
We like the example that was given earlier about how nature is so wondrous that even in cities and on buildings we see plants popping up and flowering this time of year too, so it really gets our attention. And sometimes we even see a tree growing out of a chimney, and it's sprouting up. And we think that it's managed to gain a foothold somehow, or a toehold, maybe. just a little bit there. But we need to anchor ourselves in the eternal verities. And if we are in a gutter or on a treetop, we're probably going to get blown away. It is a beginning, but when a strong storm comes along, we'll get blown away. So the more it's a process. The more we're better able to anchor ourselves in the eternal verities, then the deeper the roots grow and the firmer they are.
Yes.
Yes. And, we always remember the reading as a declaration wherein it states a purpose. Therefore, when we mention the three fundamental propositions, how are we to really gain benefit from those three propositions which are given out in these rooms?
Well, if we are mindful and discerning, and we take those three propositions, that there is a universal oneness and absolute from which all proceeds, and that all pulses in a periodicity and cause and effect, ebbing and flowing, and that as self-conscious entities, as spiritual essence using the physical form, the physical human kingdom, we can impress all of life, all of the lives. We can either assist or deter a natural impulse of evolution. So in essence, if we take any one of those aspects of the eternal and begin to think about it and use it in our sitting for meditation, it is also a wonderful anchor that if we are to experience, we're in a room and there's a peak of rage going on, there's something out of control, or we've experienced this strange, you know, this idle thought that will come to mind in traffic, and you think, I'm not thinking like that. I refuse to accept it. That's a nice time to revisit one of those aspects of the fundamentals. How are we doing on time?
We have maybe a short one. Quick.
Well, one of the eternal verities states, it's not a non-eternal verity, but it's in that book that we find in the library. It says, children of light, as ye go forth into the world, seek to do gentle service to all that live. And to accomplish that, you do that through contemplation and meditation. You realize your oneness with all of life.
As long as it's not a passive mantra, but something we're considering, we're pondering.
Yes, active meditation.
Yeah.
So I want to thank everyone for coming. And I just want to let everybody know that we copied off some some ideas about meditation from Judge Crosby and HPB and left them on the table. Thank you very much.